Tim, good morning. As is our tradition, I'd like to begin by offering a prayerful message to bring us into presence as we begin our journey into studying this important topic. This is a quote from Howard Thurman. In the stillness of the quiet, if we listen, we can hear the whisper of the heart, giving strength to weakness, courage to fear, hope to despair. I'm so grateful to be with you all this morning. Be back again. Your prayers and love last week have enfolded me, and for that I am grateful. I felt all of your love. This morning, we are honored to have our good friend, Buddy Parker, with us during these very unsettled times. Just a short 2 weeks ago, I was sitting with Buddy, Rebecca, and Heather, feeding on the words of wisdom from our teacher, Cynthia Bourgeau. She was offering a call for transformation and steadfast action during these difficult times. We've been listening to that call to hold fast to our post and do our part in aiding a broken world here in our own group and Word and Life. As we've studied these last 2 years, the wisdom teachings of Jesus in our attempt to bring this message to our community of faithful seekers, our steering committee is humbled to have been a conduit for these teachings, along with the richness of our gifted speakers. And we have another one here with us again today, and we welcome you, Buddy. As I was contemplating on how I would introduce Buddy this morning, I happened to check my email, and I saw a message from Cynthia, fresh in this morning. And in her words, I think this is really important in light of what we're trying to accomplish here in our series. Quote, we are at a major planetary tipping point, culturally, intellectually, politically, and ecologically. The need is now to create a powerful new vessel for nurturing consciousness, thoughtful, prayerful human beings who can act with agency, rootedness, and compassionate impartiality. There couldn't be a better voice to lead us into this understanding of our current cultural chaos than Buddy. He'll take us into his world, of which most of us aren't familiar, in which he will flesh out this morning's chapters, Voice and Wisdom, as the undercarriage of justice. As Cynthia says, wisdom isn't knowing more, it's knowing with more of you, seeing from the eye of the heart. And yet, how can we manage this call from our ordinary way of seeing when we see the world is divided? Buddy is an esteemed attorney in Atlanta, Georgia, formerly a federal prosecutor and widely recognized for his litigation skills. His own story of transformation is compelling, as many of you heard last winter. It's been my great honor and joy to have been learning from both Buddy and Rebecca these past 3.5 years, as we have explored how the wisdom teachings of Jesus can assist us in transformation of consciousness to meet the challenges of our times. So I'm gonna just give you another quote from Cynthia that I think is pertinent to what we're going to be talking about this morning. One can only imagine how greatly the political and religious cultural wars of our era can be eased by the simple courtesy of what she calls the law of three. One, the enemy is never the problem, but the opportunity. Two, the problem will never be solved through eliminating or silencing the opposition, but only through creating a new field of possibility large enough to hold the tension of opposites and launch them in a new direction. Imagine what a different world it would be if these two simple precepts were internalized and enacted. And now we're pleased to continue our tradition of welcoming our speaker with Tom Heck's beautiful blessing song. So please raise your hands in blessing as we hear these words.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you.
Buddy, it's all yours.
Good morning. Well, I am once again honored to be present with you and to spend some time together. I would like to focus initially on some of the comments of Sister Joan in these two chapters that I will be addressing, voice and wisdom. But let's begin by referring back to the beginning in her book, in which she said, "This book is about the prophet in you. A world gone badly askew stands on the cusp between authoritarianism and freedom, between universal compassion and national self-centeredness. It is a world scarred with violence, institutionalized fraud, rapacious human degradation, political suppression, economic slavery, and rampant narcissism." This book was published, I noted, in 2019. We are now in 2023, in the fall of the year. It has been less than 2 weeks since the horrific terroristic assault by Hamas on individuals in Israel, and Israel's violent response thereto, and in fact, the war, as it is identified, is ongoing, and there's the possibility of a second front being opened against Hezbollah with additional human carnage. I mentioned that because, as those who have read this book and who have focused on the message of Sister Joan realize, at the heart of her message lies the concepts of peace and justice. So let me begin by just identifying from each chapter a few passages to your attention, which we will then follow up on in further discussion. So from chapter 11 on voice, quote, "No real comfort comes to anyone from the drip, drip, drip of peace and justice." That's the quote, "Throw them a bone," close quote, politics of the modern world. "A little bit for everyone, never more than that to anyone. It is just enough to keep the groundlings quiet." The words of vision, on the other hand, give life. Visionaries talk about rightness for everyone, a right kind of life, the right level of justice. Most of all, the right criteria used to determine what a right life looks like and what constitutes enough justice to truly be justice. And then further, "For the prophet, the right criterion to be applied to the whole of human journey is the word of the God, of God, who wishes us," scripture says, quote, "well and not woe," close quote. It requires that from one end of the social scale to the other, we each have available the measure of life's resources we need so that being alive is a blessing and not a burden. Still further in the chapter on voice, "Expedience, the acceptance of what's possible rather than commitment to the continuing struggle for what's right, may allay the ills of the world temporarily. It will not, however, move society another inch toward the reign of God," only deep down faith in the spiritual magnet in the human heart can do that. Only the certainty that God's will for justice and equality trumps self-centeredness and greed in human evolution can do that. And lastly, in voice, she says, "One generation of prophets seeds the next. As the Shaker Antoinette Doolittle puts it, quote, every cycle has its prophets as guiding stars, and they are the burning candles of God to light the spiritual temple on earth for the time being." In this chapter, Sister Joan identified a number of prophets during our lifetime, Martin Luther King particularly, and others. Clearly they had vision. Clearly they saw of a better time, of a better place. And they had purpose, and they were guided in their quest for peace and justice. Now, some comments from the chapter on wisdom. In fact, if anything diminishes the power of prophetic statement, it is a prophetic statement that is wrong about an important issue. Not correct, not thought out, not presented carefully and honestly. The prophet does not come to condemn those who think differently about a thing. The prophet comes to warn, to persuade, and to enlighten. The prophet's call is to unite the world in an honest understanding of the word of God for humankind. Further, prophetic spirits come to notify the world of what will happen if, as a people, we continue in the direction we're going. They come to dissuade us from the perils of the positions we are creating for ourselves. And still further, the prophets from thousands of years ago are stern warning for the elders and the prophets of our own time. They leave us with a certain awareness that there is more we must do than decry what we do not like. We must also teach the truths of life, the why of the unjust situation, the downside of the present situation, the will of God for the world that is being violated in its present situation. Most of all, we must also describe the world that must be put in its place. The agenda of the prophetic leader is peace and justice, justice and peace. The role of the prophetic community is to enable a group to study the issues, to become proficient in them, and to take a particular stand for justice. Prophetic communities do a great deal more than pray. They study, they teach, they organize others, they add something of the things of God to the situation. We either become prophets or simply churchgoers. The ultimate question, the question we must all answer, and you, what are you doing about it? Peace and justice, justice and peace. In the newsletter that was sent out of Sister Joan this week by Judith. I noted that Sister Joan said, and I quote, "It is time for us to withdraw our support for violence as we once withdrew it from the bartering for women, the institution of slavery, and the practice of chaining the mentally unfit. The spiritual effect is to become a person of peace, too strong to be intimidated even by our own, too involved to be silent. The function of the peacemaker is not to shirk combat with evil. The function of the peacemaker is to find ways to confront evil without becoming evil." Sister Joan clearly recognized the presence of evil within the world, and that it is a constant prevailing force throughout the world in many different forms. Evil undeniably is part of the activities ongoing in Palestine, Gaza, Israel, and elsewhere in Ukraine, and the assault by Russia, the raping of women and mutilation of folk. Evil is ongoing within the United States, within Central America. There is no location in the world where evil does not appear and is not present. The world does not wait for peace or justice, I suggest to you, because the world is in constant flux and turmoil. We are called as folks of consciousness, of a community of God, to do what we can where we are in our journey to promote with integrity right doing and righteousness. There can be no question in reading The Time Is Now that Sister Joan addresses many of the ills that were created and have existed in the society that we live in the United States. And if you hearken back to what I previously have discussed, to refresh your memory, the Europeans who traveled into North America to settle it, and did settle it, came in primarily for economic reasons, although some came in for religious reasons so that they could practice their faith. But these individuals, these people, many of them we are descendant from, also came in with the idea of conquering the indigenous folk, and that they did. They did so in the name of Christianity. They not only engaged in violent acts, they engaged in fraud, in theft, in lying, cheating, and stealing. And of course, they engaged in more heinous acts, including murder. But the particular act that became endemic in our society and has affected our ability to have peace and justice was the conscious enslavement of individuals and the utilization of them as free labor. You see, what is at the backbone of the Constitution is really an economic system. An economic system that was in many ways dependent on free labor, the labor of enslaved folks. And it was framed within our Constitution. Slavery was lawful. There was no violation of any law to enslave a human and use them to work the land. In fact, not until nigh 100 years from the time of the inception of the Constitution was slavery abolished. And even then, we shifted into a dual system, particularly second class or third class citizens of the previous enslaved in the Jim Crow system in the Deep South. And of course, it's been used elsewhere. From generation to generation, lynching, raping, stealing, lying, cheating. The Constitution, it is said, was formed at the height of the Enlightenment period. It certainly is evident that it came from individuals who had been learned, educated, many in philosophy, in law, in other fine arts. Power was derived from the people, those who consented to be governed, and flowed from the people to the top. Look what's happening today. I know you heard previously that we are now in the deficient stage of the mental period. How deficient can it be that we don't even have a Speaker of the House of Representatives, the so-called People's House? Chaos abounds within the government of the United States of America. As we meet today, our government cannot, as a matter of law, act to aid and assist Israel or Ukraine. No legislation can be passed, and has no legislation, even if agreed to by both parties, can be undertaken at the moment. But we don't have any real hope in bipartisanship, do we? Our society is probably in multiple parts, not just two parts. There are all kinds of parts to this society. The prophetic conduct that Sister Joan urges we all undertake could be described as conduct of, quote, activists, close quote. It doesn't take any of us much to guess that there can be tremendous backlash to those who engage in activism, arguing for the least among us, the downtrodden, providing for that social net that is so lacking. That social net, as advocated by Sister Joan, some would say, is akin to socialism. Contrary to capitalism. And we are a capitalistic nation. Again, we are urged and called to peace and justice. As I mentioned earlier, I really view that where we are at this point in time is yet another evidence of the continuation of what Teilhard de Chardin discusses as his theory of evolution, of this constant pressure and pressure and pressure, wherever exerted and from whatever source, constantly creating activity, backlashing, movement. And he, of course, believed that this endeavor, this activity of evolution, moved the world, humankind, to what he described as the Omega Point. The Omega Point, as he described it, resembles the Christian Logos, namely Christ himself, who draws all things into himself. In the words of the Nicene Creed, quote, God from God, light from light, true God from true God, and through him all things were made. And then in the book of Revelation, Christ is described thrice as the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Are we, in fact, humankind, moving closer to the Omega Point, or are we moving closer to annihilation? Annihilation. That brings me to a topic many probably didn't expect to hear this morning, but it dovetails in with the teachings of Sister Joan and the issue of peace and justice and the concept of the safety net and the concept of providing for the least among us. I found interesting in today's New York Times an article below the fold, but nonetheless on the front page, and it is titled, Caught in the Middle, They Live in Their Cars. And it's discussing two women who now live in Kirkland, Washington, in the back seat and front seat of their 8-year-old Ford Fusion. And it's described these individuals in their life, living in their car and located on a church parking lot where they are given free ability to park their car. But the shocking thing is that one of the women, who is 49, earns $72,000 a year as a social worker for the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services. The other woman likewise earns multiple thousands of dollars. So we're not talking about individuals who are A, not employed, nor are we talking about individuals who do not have financial resources. But the financial resources provided are not enough to help them find affordable housing, to help them find food and shelter that they can really pay for. So they've been reduced earning a middle class salary, if you will, to living out of their cars or the car. And that's a new phenomenon. That's a new phenomenon. I'm not sure that someone Sister Joan had in mind when she's talking about the social net for the least of these. There was also today in the Wall Street Journal a very, very informative piece on artificial intelligence and how it posed to transform employment. I gave last week at Mary and Martha's Place, which has been recorded on Zoom and should be available for those of you who might be interested in looking at it, a discussion on artificial intelligence and its impact within our society and the need for regulation of it by our government, and whether or not that's something that could be undertaken in the near future. And the answer is it cannot. I mean, how can you regulate AI when you can't even get a speaker? But anyway, so think about this as I read these comments, and think about it in light of the prior comments I read from the chapters on Vision and Wisdom by Sister Joan. Again, the title is AI is Poised to Transform Employment. Quote, this is from a meeting in Laguna Beach, California. Artificial intelligence will likely lead to seismic changes in the workforce, eliminating many professions and requiring a societal rethink of how people spend their time, prominent tech leaders said Tuesday. Speaking at the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live conference, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman said that the changes could hit some people in the economy more seriously than others, even if society as a whole improves. This will likely be a hard sell for the most affected people, he said. He pointed to many types of physicians and accountants as examples of professions that AI would largely supplant, because these systems can more easily access a broad array of knowledge. The increased prosperity that AI will bring to societies that adopt it, however, will allow people who don't want to work to avoid it if they choose to. Quote, I believe the need to work in society will disappear in 25 years for these countries that adapt these technologies. He said, quote, I do think there's room for universal basic income, assuring a minimum standard, and people will be able to work on those things if they want to work. Altman said that ensuring a basic income won't be enough. People will need outlets for creative expression and a chance to add something back to the trajectory of the special societies, he said. It discusses in this article the very very recognized need that we as humans need agency. We need to have an appreciation and understanding that there is a reason for our existence and a purpose for our existence. If, as projected, artificial intelligence removes the need for human toil, then what we are talking about is having to change our society, where we have and are all supported by the state. If we're not engaging in capitalistic activity because it's no longer financially feasible for the ownership class, then there will be many, many more of us who will be in need of that safety net, and that safety net will have to be much larger. Think about the pressures this is going to exert on any group of folks who try to engage in leadership of the society. Think about the pressures of this is going to be on those who do not have the connections with individuals in power. Power and money will continue to dominate and dictate how we are able to exist and live if we abdicate our roles of citizenship, if we fail to exercise those constitutional rights, particularly the right to vote. It is not a pleasant picture that we are presented with, and it looks to be getting bleaker. I'm very afraid that more violence will be occasioned within our own society, generated by political unrest, as the next few months unfold. Peace and justice, justice and peace. Just what are they? What might they become or be? How are we in our own stage of life, in our own journey, able to participate and promote peace and justice? I raise these questions because I think they should be discussed in the breakout sessions. I'm not sure we've ever individually or collectively thought about this, and it needs to be thought about. Sister Joan was right to advocate for it in 2019. She is right to advocate even further for it in 2023. The need cannot be greater. Voices need to be heard about right conduct. Wisdom needs to be not only used, but discussed and passed down to those who are going to be here long past our own time on this earth. I wish I had more upbeat information to pass on to you, but you have to face the reality. And the reality is the enemy is within, and the enemy is us. We must engage in conscious effort to promote rightfulness, righteousness, and all that is good within all that is here. Because God is present throughout all of our lives in everything, in every way. So I will leave the current discussion where we are, hoping, Tim, that there can be much discussion in breakouts. And I await to talk to you later.
Thanks, buddy. Would you like to offer up an invitation to conversation? I'm going to put those questions you said earlier in the chat. They're pretty short and sweet, but is there anything else you'd like to add before we move?
I guess I would add, I'd like people to contemplate, you know, it's sort of what can one do, or what can we do? I got it. I understand political support for cause A or cause B, but what else is there that can be done or undertaken? I would like to think that by our conduct, that a message is communicated through one's conduct. Not just language that you use, but what you do, how you do it, how it's undertaken. You know, I viewed Sister Joan's book really as a series of sermons, The Time Is Now, and a call for uncommon courage. Well, I would suggest maybe among ourselves, what is it that we can do in our way, our own individual way or our collective way, to meet that call?
Wonderful. I've thrown those in the chat. So as we move to our reflection groups, you all can see those questions there. I hope you have a fruitful time of dialogue. And so we'll spend about 20 minutes here, probably come back around 11:10 Pacific time. Have a little bit more of closing conversation with Buddy. And so we look forward to the rest of the morning. Accept the little pop-up invitation when it comes here, and we'll see you in a bit. Good to see you all back from Reflection Groups. We've got another 20 minutes or so to have some closing conversation with Buddy. So if you've got a question, you can throw it in the chat. You can try to raise your hand or do the digital raise hand feature, and we will get you in the process. But Buddy, do you have any opening thoughts you want to begin this time with, or should we just go straight to questions?
Let's go straight through to questions.
Sounds good. Anna, why don't you unmute and go ahead? You're still muted. Just there you go.
Okay, Buddy, who is it that inspires you today? It's pretty easy to feel really hopeless. There must be somebody around that inspires you.
Well, you know, Anna, I think there are many people that inspire me who are people within this community, people in that I know that Marianne has discussed with you from various teachings with Cynthia, people that are involved in secular activity. I look for the goodness in others as a means of reflection, indicating that we are not all, we have not all succumbed to evil. There are those who truly have integrity and believe in the golden rule, and in believe in the support of the society and the laws, and who are, whether it be progressive or conservative in their political support, nonetheless recognize the value of the liberties that we live in this country. So that's my answer. There's not one individual, there's not a person such as an MLK who in this day and age I would look to. Now, I will share with you, all of you, that I had a personal relationship and friendship with John Lewis. John Lewis, who passed away at the age of 80, was born and raised 30 miles north of where I was born and raised. And while it's been a couple of years since he died, and I'm only 72, he and I met each other here in Atlanta, and we, of course, had different life experiences, but from the same locality in South Alabama. And so I did, I was extraordinarily inspired by him.
Great example.
Yeah.
We really needed and missed his leadership.
Peggy, yeah, I see a hand up. Why don't you go ahead and unmute?
Hello. In your remarks, you said that you were afraid of violence within the next few months. And I wasn't sure why, because of because of AI and the increasing use of it, or because of our political dysfunction, or something else, maybe.
It's the political dysfunction. That's the primary cause, I believe, of violence. For those who may not know, I am representing John Eastman, who is in the Georgia RICO case. And I'm not referring to my client, but there have been individuals I have been introduced who I would not have otherwise been introduced except because I'm defending in this case. Listening to some of their comments are a bit frightening, or if not a bit, a lot frightening. So that's the underlying basis for my statement.
Well,
and how do we confront that if or people that we feel are so wrong, and but we have to somehow.
Well, you have to recognize it, and you have to be, in addition of being conscious about it, you have to be smart about yourself. I think one of the most recent events that has happened in the last 24 hours is the fact that in this speaker election, there have been individuals who have made death threats and other violent threats against certain members of Congress who were the so-called moderate Republicans, with the expectation it would they would capitulate and support Jim Jordan. The fact is, they didn't. And they publicly disclose these threats, and you know, so that's a significant event.
Yeah.
And that's been in within the last 24 hours.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that insight.
Thank Jackie, you.
Why don't you go ahead and unmute?
Did you say Jackie? I didn't hear you. One of your chat questions in the beginning was, what is justice? And I would like to hear what your interpretation of it is, especially since you're in the legal field.
Well, as many were discussing in the group that I attended, you know, the concept of the Old Testament, an eye for an eye, and you know, there are all kinds of, getting back to the legal field, restorative justice, trying to make whole the victims, you know, if it's an economic activity. But how do you make whole people who have lost loved ones? Justice to me is not a black and white concept. It comes with many I'm trying to think of the right word. It is a concept that's fluid, that depends. You had the concept of the massive apartheid society of South Africa, and you had the Truth Commission created, where there was going to be non-prosecution for people who engaged in criminal conduct in the name of apartheid in order to help get all the facts out and to disclose why conduct was done, to try to heal the society so that it could function. Then you have the concept of justice being you. It's not what is justice, it's the administration of justice. Is it fairly administrated, or is it administrated for improper motivations such as race? My point in bringing this out is to try to say that I view justice as a secular concept, although I realize it's part of many verses in the Bible, but also view it as a concept that is necessary for humans to feel like they are being recognized and treated fairly, whether they are perpetrators of antisocial conduct or whether they are victims of that conduct. And I feel like it's a process, you know?
Like a river, as Isaiah said, let justice roll down like a river.
That's correct.
What else, friends? Anything else lingering? Yeah, Diana, why don't you go ahead?
I have a burning question. Are we moving closer to the omega point or to annihilation?
I don't really know the answer, Diana, but I choose to believe we are moving closer to the omega point. I'm a glass half full kind of person, as opposed to a glass half empty. I do think this: we're getting closer and closer to some kind of event, whether you call it a cataclysmic event or catastrophic event, or there is something that will occur possibly within our own lifetime, certainly our children's lifetime, that's going to be a make or break for democracy, certainly within the United States. At least the democratic process that we understand it to be.
Thank you.
Yeah, Karen, why don't you go ahead and unmute?
It's interesting. I was just started reading a book by Stephen Charleston. He's a retired Episcopal bishop. He's indigenous. And the book is called We Survived the End of the World: Lessons from Native America on Apocalypse and Hope. And it's just, you know, he's basically saying, you know, the Native Americans were pretty much almost annihilated. But yet, he in the book, it's going to talk about different leaders who had certain ways of dealing with their situation. And, you know, he's coming through. And the same as Joan Chittister, he's calling for all of us to be prophets. So I found that interesting that the two books really are meshing with their thoughts of, you know, we all need to do something. We all need to be on the forefront, and we do need, you know, there is hope. Just wanted to say it's a good book.
I've got a question. It's Maura. You were mentioning, I think you were, thank you for your presentation, buddy. You were, I think, quoting Joan about the tension of opposites, holding the tension of opposites. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, creating opportunities where a field opportunity that can hold the tension of the opposites. So one side of the opposite is the dysfunction, political, as we're talking about now. But what's the opposite of that, which creates the tension of the opposite?
Well, that's a very good question. I guess, you know, the problem I have in answering that is it's like, how long have we really debated policy in the country? Outside of the abortion issue, because what we have had going on for a number of years, whether some would believe before when Obama became president, as opposed to when Trump became president, we've had absolute anger rising within people to argue against the other. And we've had absolute identification in very public ways of individuals who are finding their ability to articulate their anger and hatred for the other. And that is creating so much dysfunction within our system, our political system, that I don't know how to describe what is the antithesis of what you said was the dysfunction, but I am saying that it is the wellspring of, and I would say genesis of, seeds of evil within humankind that are being expressed and acted on, even if that action does not rise to the level of per se violence, but it's the advocation of that. So I don't know if I answered your question correctly or not, but those are my thoughts.
All right, thank you. You said seeds of destruction, so I'm just wondering, maybe seeds of hope, because we're all here together.
Oh, I definitely believe in that. I definitely believe in communities such as the one that we are now present in.
Thank you.
I think one seed of hope that we saw just yesterday was the fact that more votes for Jim Jordan, the vote count increased, that he should not be the House leader, and more people on the Republican side are agreeing with that. And I think that's a hopeful thing that he's not going to be the Speaker of the House.
All right, any final question here? We're just a minute from closing, so might have time for one more. If not, I'll toss it back to Marianne.
Wow, thank you, buddy, for those powerful and sobering words coming from deep within you. I think it's really important that we spend time just in conversation with each other, considering these very, very important concepts, and how can we hold our post to be carriers of justice and wisdom. So it's important that we find a pathway in our community to hold fast and bear the suffering of the world through our wisdom practices. So thank you, buddy. And next week, we're in for another wonderful presentation with our friend, dear Judith Valente. She's here with us today. And she will speak to the courage and consciousness of proclamation and vision. And Judith, as always, will bring the wisdoms and practices of the Benedictine way as we tackle these huge problems of our time. And now I'd like to just leave you with some short words of encouragement. From the teachings of Micah, you've probably all heard these words. They're kind of, they're attributed to the Torah, but they actually come from a combination of Jewish teachings as well. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now, love mercy now, walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Thank you. See you next week.
What a lovely way to end, Marianne. Thank you so much. And thank you, Buddy, for your wisdom. And best of luck as you get back to the Fulton County Courthouse, guy. We're in your corner. All right, unmute and say goodbye to everybody. Say thanks to Buddy, and we'll see you next Thursday.
Thank you, Buddy.
That was thank great. You all.
Thank you.
See you soon,
Buddy.
Everyone. See you
next week. Thank you so much. Thank you.